Just before saying anything about the Lord's work in Brazil, I would like to read a few verses with you, a very brief reading from the Acts of the Apostles, and we read, please, in chapter 14. For sake of time, we'll just begin to read at verse number 21, when Paul and Barnabas are in the town or city of Derbe. Verse 21 says, "When they had preached the gospel to that city and had taught many, they returned again to Lystra and to Iconium and Antioch, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith." And then verse 23 says that when they had ordained them elders in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed. Now that's all that we'll take time to read. I don't intend to make any comments directly on the verses we have read together, but simply to use this little passage as an example or a model for missionary work, and to base our remarks about the work in Brazil on these verses. We have seen that Paul and Barnabas went to Derbe, and they preached the gospel. But their work included much more than that. The next verse tells us that they made many disciples, they taught many. And then we read of them exhorting and comforting those saints. And then we read that they ordained elders in every assembly. And then with prayer and fasting, they took their leave, commending them to the Lord on whom they believed. As I think of Brazil this evening, I would like to set before you as simply and briefly as possible how that same example is being followed in that land today. But first of all, one or two general remarks about Brazil. It doesn't appear on our map. You need to travel quite a bit farther south from Mexico. I think everyone knows more or less where it is. Perhaps not all realize just how big and how populous Brazil really is. It's about half of South America, both in area and in population. Over 150 million souls in that land today. The Portuguese language is spoken everywhere in that country. The only exception would be a few very, very small Indian tribes around the Amazon jungle. Many of those little tribes speak Portuguese as well as their own language. So that with the Portuguese language, the door is open to all parts of that vast land. I would say again, the door is open, very literally, because no restrictions whatever are placed upon our movements. We're free to move about that country from north to south. We can preach the gospel in the open air. We can go around the doors. We can have gospel halls. We can engage in whatever form of activity we feel most appropriate. And I would like at the outset just to make that clear and ask for your prayers that this might be long continued, if such be the will of God. In that vast land today, we're thankful to say that the gospel is being preached, and there are quite a number of assemblies. I couldn't give you exact figures. Sometimes to try to confine the work of the Lord within human statistics is not only difficult but dangerous, but there are quite a number of assemblies in that vast country. If you come right up to the north of Brazil, around the basin of the great river Amazon, you'll find a small group of assemblies strung along the banks of that river. Maybe 10 or 12 assemblies up around that part, many of them very small. But we're thankful that around that part of Brazil there are these golden lampstands, very insignificant in the eyes of men. They would never get a mention in the Brazilian press, but very, very precious in the eyes of our God. When you leave the Amazon and travel south, well, it's maybe 3,000 miles right down to the south of the country. When you come into the extreme south in the state of Rio Grande do Sul, you'll find another group of assemblies. There are quite a number of brethren and sisters from the north of Ireland who have gone to Rio Grande do Sul. They've been laboring there since the early 1950s. God has blessed their labors. Assemblies have been planted and they flourish. To give you an example of how things are going in the extreme south, I well remember the first conference we had there in the city of Porto Alegre. That was 1962. If memory doesn't fail me, there were about 36 or 37 people present at the conference, and I can tell you we were encouraged by seeing so many there. Of that 36 or 7, there were quite a number of foreigners, Mr. and Mrs. McCann Sr., the late Samuel Curran and his wife, Harry Wilson and his wife, and myself. If you take all those out of the 36 or 37, there weren't very many left. Last time I was at a conference in Porto Alegre, I think it was 3 years ago, there were over 500 gathered for that conference, and that would give an idea of how God has prospered the work in the south of Brazil. Now, between those two extremes of north and south, you'll find scattered here and there throughout the country a number of little assemblies, some of them very isolated, some of them almost unknown or forgotten. But they continue their testimony for God in a scriptural simplicity. When I first went to Brazil in 1960, I spent a number of years in the state of Rio Grande do Sul, in that area where I've already mentioned. But as the years went past, I began to feel more and more concerned about the state of São Paulo. It's a little to the south of the center of the country, still in the southern half, although about 1,000 miles north of Rio Grande do Sul. It's the most populous state in Brazil. There are over 20% of the total population live there. Over 30 million people in that one state, and it's not by any means one of the bigger states. Many large towns and cities there. The city which bears the same name, the city of São Paulo, has an estimated population of some 16 million people. Souls that are going down to hell that need the gospel. As that burden began to grow, I felt more and more that God would have me leave Rio Grande do Sul and move into the state of São Paulo. In 1967, my wife and I came to the city of Descalvado, bought a little house in that town. We began to work spreading the gospel. No assembly, no Christians, no friends. For a number of years it was a very lonely, uphill struggle, because the people at that time were just like the people of today in Brazil. They have no desire to hear the gospel. Very indifferent to the claims of Christ. There were many times during those early days, when we couldn't really have a series of gospel meetings. We attempted to have them. We announced series of gospel meetings, went around the doors inviting the people to come. Some nights a few would come. Other nights no one would come at all. And the struggle went on year after year. The situation has changed a lot today. Not that the people have changed, they're still indifferent, maybe even more so today than they were then. But the situation has changed because we're not alone in that area anymore. God has come in over the years and saved a number. They're helping in the spread of the gospel. And recently we have been joined there by others that God has sent forth into the harvest field. About 6 or 7 years ago, Mr. and Mrs. Terry Blackman from England came along and joined us in the town of Pirasunungo, where we were then living. They're still there today. Then just 2 years ago, another couple, commended to the grace of God by an assembly in Manchester, England, Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Renshaw came along. They lived in Pirasunungo for a few months until they learnt a little of the language. Then they moved out into a new town in that same area called Casabrunca, and they're labouring there today. As I look back over these years in that area, we can thank God for what He has accomplished. Discalvado, where we went to live in 1967, which proved so difficult, today has a little assembly, not very large, about 32 in fellowship. Just last month we had our annual conference. At the conference we had 250 people gathered together for a day of conference, so there has been progress. In the immediate area, there are a number of little assemblies now. From Descalvado, the gospel spread out to the neighbouring towns. And in the early 1970s, a little assembly was formed in Ibate, about 40 miles from Descalvado. Then in the late 70s, another assembly commenced in Pirasunungo, about 25 miles from Descalvado in the other direction. Then in the mid-80s, another little assembly was planted in a town called Porto Ferreira, about halfway between Descalvado and Pirasunungo. And just 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago, the fifth assembly was planted in a nearby town called Santa Cruz das Palmeiras. As well as that, there is a little gospel hall that has been built in a town called Leme, where a few have been saved over the years and a few have been baptized, but still no assembly. And then over in the town of Casabrunca, where our brother Andrew Renshaw and his family have moved recently, there is a little beginning, a little hall there too, and one or two that have professed to be saved, but still no assembly. A number of other towns around the district we have preached in from time to time with series of meetings. At times we have rented premises and carried on a regular weekly gospel meeting for a few years. But in those towns, to the present, we have seen no results, heard of none getting saved. But that's a general picture of what's going on around that area today. I would like to go back to Acts chapter 14 and begin over again, to go into one or two details about how that has been accomplished. It's all very good to say that in 1967 there was nothing in that area. Today there are five assemblies and quite a number who have been saved and baptized. But how was all that done? What methods were used? Well, we have always been convinced of one thing, that it pleases God through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. So when we moved into that district, we moved in with one intention, to preach the gospel. The gospel was preached oftentimes on the doorsteps, going around from door to door. When possible, in halls or homes in those early days. Now it's preached regularly and frequently in gospel halls, in rented halls, in tents, in the open air. But we do still continue to give much time to door-to-door work, going around and giving out gospel tracts and preaching to the people on their doorsteps. Perhaps I should take a moment to mention one detail concerning that aspect of the work, because that's how it started in Derbe and Lystra and Iconium, where we've just been reading about. They went there preaching the gospel. There's a dear brother that we've learned to value very highly, a man of God who got saved in Descalvado quite some time ago. A short time after he was saved, he said he would like to go with me as I went round from door to door with tracts. He would like to give some of his time to the spread of the gospel. He had his own business at this time, so he closed down his little business for a half a day and came out with me to go around the doors. After a short time, after going round for a few days, he said, "You know, I think you're doing this the wrong way around." Well, I'm always willing to learn, so I said, "What do you think we're doing wrong?" He said, "Well, when you go to a door and someone comes and answers the door, you ask them, would you accept a gospel tract? You give them the gospel tract and they take it. And then you begin to preach to them and try to tell them about a savior, tell them about their sin, that they need to get saved. But they're not really listening to you. They're looking at the gospel tract and they're turning it over and looking at the front and looking at the back and wanting to see what it's about." He said, "I think you're doing it the wrong way around." He said, "Right, the next house we go to, you take over and see what way we can do it." The next house we went to, a lady came to the door. He said, "Good afternoon, could we have a few moments of your time? We would like to tell you something very important." He began to tell her how she was a sinner. She was in danger of going down to hell, but God loved her and Christ died for her. You know, we spent over half an hour on that doorstep, and as we left, he put a gospel tract into her hand. I had to admit, our dear brother was right. We tried to do it that way, but from door to door we preached the gospel, and God has been working. Not only do we preach the gospel around the doorsteps, but we have been trying to preach for this last 11 years in a gospel tent. The model of the tent we got when we were at home in Ireland in 1982, when we went back to Brazil in 83, with the help of another brother, we made a tent on the same scale, the same model, and it's been in use ever since. It has been very useful. We have taken it into quite a number of towns and places where we had no halls to preach in, and God has used it. At times there have been problems with vandals. On one occasion they tried to put fire to the tent during a meeting. On other occasions it has been cut down and badly damaged. But in spite of that, it's still going strong today. And as we look back over the years, any damage or any trouble caused by the tent has been well repaid when we think of souls that were saved in it and are today in assembly fellowship. So the first step in any of those towns around us is to preach the gospel. But that's not the sum total of our activities. When we go back to Acts chapter 14, as well as preaching the gospel, we find those men making many disciples, teaching many. You know, that's very time-consuming. When we did see a few souls saved around Descalvado in the beginning, we found that it was necessary to give much time to them. I'm not referring to a series of ministry meetings. They did learn a lot in the meetings. But as well as public teaching, it's necessary to use another expression of the Apostle Paul, to teach from house to house. That can be very demanding if we're going to make ourselves available. We heard this afternoon of the available Christ. His servants should always be available too, whether it be by day or by night. Paul spoke to the Thessalonians about laboring night and day, and very literally that's necessary if we're really to help the new converts to grow in grace. Not only was there a making of disciples at that early stage, but Paul continued exhorting and comforting. Perhaps I should take a moment or two to mention one or two examples of that. There's one man comes to mind just now who got saved in Descalvado, away at the beginning. He's a pillar in the assembly there today. When I first got to know him, he was a good living man, a Roman Catholic like all the rest, but he wasn't going along to chapel anymore. He had stopped going along to the place of worship where he had always gone, the so-called place of worship. After he left that, he'd been around quite a number of other places, some Pentecostal places and other denominations. When I got to know him, he was going nowhere. He'd been reading his Bible for 14 years, but he wasn't saved. He asked me many questions about the Scriptures, and I could see from the questions that he had read his Bible and read it thoughtfully. Yet when we came to the matter of salvation, he couldn't take it in. Anything else you would point out to him, if he saw it in the Bible, he would say, well, it's in the Bible, it must be true. But when we came to the subject of salvation, he would shake his head in silence and look at me and say, well, it's there all right, but it just can't be as easy as that. He couldn't understand how one could be saved without some merit of their own. He came to meetings, but it took a lot of persuasion to get him to come. I thought he would come the first time I asked him, because I'd been in his home many times reading the Scriptures with him, and he was so interested in the Scriptures. So I went along eagerly to tell him the first day we were going to have a meeting when we got a little hall rented. And he was very frank. I asked him to come to the meeting, and he said, no, I'll not be there. It's very, very unusual for any Brazilian to say, no, I'll not be there. I think a Brazilian culture demands that you be good-mannered and try to make the other person as happy as you can, so you say, yes, I'll go along, surely. I'll take a few other people with me, but there's no intention of coming. But this man was honest. He said, no, I'll not be there. I tried to persuade him, telling him we'd be reading the Scriptures and preaching the Gospel. He said, no, I don't want anything to do with religion. I've been around all the churches in the town. They all read the Bible. They all say that they obey the Bible, but none of them do. They follow the statutes of their own religion. They follow their own opinions or the opinions of some leader. And I don't want anything like that. I'll stay at home with my Bible. I tried to tell him that we were simply using the Scriptures and preaching the Word of God and nothing else. He laughed and said, they all say that. You just go on with your religion. And any day you have an hour or two to spare, come around here and we'll read the Scriptures together. We continued to visit the man, and he wouldn't come to meetings. Then after quite a long time, he surprised me one day by saying, I'm going along to your meeting tonight. Well, we were glad to hear that. He must have noticed the joy that lit up my face. He said, now just a moment. I don't want you to get too excited about it. I haven't said I'm joining your religion. You've talked so much about this meeting, I'm going along to see what it's like. But as soon as I see anything there that's not in accordance with this book, I'll not be back. Well, that made me even more determined to have that man come along to the meetings. And he came along. But it was 2 or 3 years after that before he got saved. When he did get saved, he made rapid progress. He wasn't very long saved until he asked if I could go round to his house some evening to study the Scriptures with him, some things he wanted to have cleared up. We went around one Monday evening. We spent a few hours together over the Scriptures. He asked me if I could come back again. We continued going every Monday night to his house. Then one or two other folk that had professed to be saved heard about it, so they said they would want to come too. And it began to grow unintentionally. And that has continued up to this present day. Any Monday night that I'm around there, I would still go along to that little Bible reading. It started off without any intention of becoming a fixture. But today those brethren from Descalvado gather together every Monday night for a Bible reading. And brethren from neighboring assemblies will come along too. And has become quite a profitable occasion when those who have been saved can study the Scriptures together and can grow in their knowledge and understanding of the Word of God. But very often, the time that must be given to individual believers, because of their own personal peculiar problems or difficulties, is very, very demanding, and at times it has taken a whole night session. But it's well worth the time that's given, and the availability of the servant of Christ is vitally important if a work for God is to be established and grow. When we come back to Acts chapter 14, we find that Paul was not content just to preach the gospel and teach the saints. He had something else in view. I believe it was his objective in any place that he entered, not only to preach the gospel and see people saved, but to see them gathered together, that a collective testimony might be established, that he might leave behind him an assembly. And I believe that that's vitally important for us even today. Were we to go into Brazil and simply preach the gospel that souls might get saved, many would think that was very, very good. That would not be fulfilling the commission that the Master gave. And I believe it is our duty not only to take a message to the unsaved, a message of salvation, but to take a message to those who are saved, a message of separation that would gather them unto the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. And you know, an assembly doesn't just spring up overnight. At least we have never seen that in Brazil. It has taken quite a long time and quite a lot of work. I would like to tell you about one or two of those assemblies. The time is passing very quickly, so I think maybe just one before we draw to a close. We'll take the assembly in Descalvado, for that's where it all started in that area. The progress was very slow at the beginning. It was difficult to get people to come along to gospel meetings. But progress is more rapid today. Not because the people are any easier to reach, but because it's no longer one person trying to reach the others, but those who are saved have a part in the work as well. But I would like to stress that everyone in the assembly has a responsibility in regard to gospel outreach. Oftentimes I hear complaints. I don't know what it's like in North America, I haven't been here long enough to know. But in other parts of the world, I've often heard believers say that we just can't get people into our Sunday night gospel meeting. Our Sunday night gospel meeting is more or less a formality. We only have our own children present, no other unbelievers, no other unsaved. You know, when we stop to think about that, it's a sad situation. But if we were to look at it in another way, each believer could surely influence some friend to come along. And if I have only one friend that would be willing to accept my invitation if I went along to pick him up and bring him, well, if the assembly had 50 in fellowship and each one brought a friend, there would be 50 unsaved listening to the gospel to start with. And I know it's not easy. Very difficult to get people into the meetings. But if everyone tries, I think our Sunday night gospel meetings would take on a different appearance. We've tried to impress that upon the saints in Brazil. Many of them do work tirelessly, ceaselessly, trying to bring others. Sometimes if you find it difficult to bring a friend along, maybe some other brethren helping you would do it. It took 4 men in Capernaum to bring a paralyzed man into the presence of the Lord. So maybe if we united our efforts, we could bring a few more along. And in that way, numbers are growing around Descalvado. The assembly has matured, to the extent that over these years, God has called from their midst two brethren to a work that he has prepared for them. That dear brother who taught me how to go around the doors, he was the first. Over 10 years ago, he was called of God. He left Descalvado, commended by the assembly to the grace of God, went into a town maybe 30 miles away, where there was no assembly, and began to open up new ground for God. He's still going on faithfully today, laboring, and God has blessed his labors, and souls have been saved. Just 2 years ago, another young man who was saved in his teens, now married with three small children, gave up a very good job in the town, commended to the grace of God from the assembly there again. He went off to another town in another direction, about 25-30 miles away. There was no assembly there. And there he labors spreading the gospel, and God has blessed his efforts as well. Another aspect of the work that I must mention as we draw to a close is the fact that an assembly needs a godly oversight, a God-given leadership. It was pointed out during the conference, whether it was today or yesterday, I'm not sure, that the assembly is not a place where you can do just as you like. It's a place of divine order. We do learn in the Acts of the Apostles how that the Spirit of God raises up overseers to take care, to shepherd the flock of God. Now that has always been a concern with us since we started in Descalvado. Of course, in the early stages when those dear Christians began to meet together, there were no recognized elders. It takes time, as we learn from Acts chapter 14. But in course of time, if things are going normally, we should soon be able to see that the Spirit of God is raising up overseers in our midst. And we can thank God that in Descalvado, men have been raised up who have shown the characteristics, the qualifications, and who have shown a willingness to engage in the work and shoulder the responsibility caring for the flock. That dear man I told you about at the beginning that wouldn't come to the meetings, who was so frank with us, he's there today in Descalvado. He's now almost 70 years of age. He's a godly elder, a man that we value highly in the work of the Lord. It has cost him a lot. It has cost him sleepless nights. He didn't tell me that, but his wife did. It has caused him health problems. For sad to say, the little assembly in Descalvado has had its problems. I think every assembly has. But in spite of problems, it continues to prosper. We can thank God that today we can look at that town and see a little company of Christians that gather each Lord's Day morning to break bread. They gather from time to time to preach the gospel in the hall. They'll go out around the doors with gospel tracts, or they'll erect a gospel tent and have a series of meetings. They'll meet during the week for prayer, for a Bible reading. When we think of men who some time ago were in total darkness, today they have an understanding of divine principles and love God's assembly. They're willing to give their lives for it. We can only bow our hearts before him and say, this is the Lord's doing. It's marvelous in our eyes. I think, according to time, I've just about 3 minutes left. And I would like to take that to mention one thing that has been very much used in our part of Brazil. From the very beginning, we have used quite a lot of literature. First of all, in the spread of the gospel, we still do that, printing gospel tracts and a little gospel paper which we give out around the towns. And then after some time, we began to print more and more literature with a view to reaching those who are saved. At first it was a number of little booklets about assembly principles, then about other subjects because of the presence of so many false cults around Brazil. And then we began to go into something bigger when some brethren from Scotland invited us to translate the series of commentaries, What the Bible Teaches. You know that series, I've seen it in the corridor these days. It's quite a big task to put all that into Portuguese, but work is well advanced. About half of those volumes have already been translated. Two of them have been printed. The others that are translated await revision before going to the printer. And we would seek to press on with that with a view to the edifying of the people of God. We're not limiting the work to that series of commentaries. We've got permission to do a few more books. And the next one we intend to do is one written by our dear brother Sandy Higgins about the family. You'll probably know that book as well. We want to get that into Portuguese also. A number of others are also in the pipeline. We would value your prayers for wisdom in the choice of material to translate. You see, in Brazil, or in Portuguese-speaking countries, there was a tremendous lack of good literature. But I think every one of us here would acknowledge that we are much indebted to the literature that we receive. What we read in the magazines, what we get from commentaries and books, it has been a tremendous help to me, and I'm sure to you as well. But our Brazilian brethren didn't have that opportunity. We would like to do something to meet that need. Much more could have been said, and maybe should have been said, but I would commend that picture to you for your prayers. A vast land with millions of people, 150 million people, comparatively few assemblies, scattered over the country from north to south, but many states without any assembly testimony. A work that's weak, but seeking to honor God and obey His word. We would ask for your prayers. First of all, for the preservation of those assemblies. We live in days of departure. They're difficult days. People have no interest in the gospel. When that happens, sometimes Christians begin to suggest other methods. A change of tactics to attract the people. That can happen in any country. But once that road is entered on, we're on a slippery road where it's very, very difficult to come back. It's the wrong road. It's not a change of methods. We just need to get closer to God. We would value prayer. I would sincerely ask for that, for the preservation of those assemblies. They are the target of the enemy's attacks. He'll do everything to move them from the simplicity that is in Christ. Do remember to pray for their preservation. And not only that, but pray for the progress of the gospel in that vast, needy land. And finally, I would ask again for prayer for wisdom in the choice of material to print as we go on with this printing work, that the believers in Brazil may be given healthy ministry through the books and magazines that they would read. Thank you for your attention. and for your prayers.